Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough. My name is Michael Cutler. I hope you all had a terrific Thanksgiving. Certainly we did. Unfortunately, the turkey did not survive the holiday, but we certainly did, even though I felt almost as stuffed as that turkey was. Lots of stuff going on in the news, lots of reasons why I'm glad that you are joining me at the end of this week. But let me just briefly start out by reminding those of you who know me and let those of you who may be hopefully listening for the first time that my name, as I say, is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with what had been the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Today, most of the functions of the investigations branch of INS have been picked up by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the entire administrative and criminal enforcement agency of immigration now rests under that umbrella of DHS, the Department of Homeland Security. I call it the Department of Homeland Surrender. And if you're not familiar with that term, you will quickly find out why I feel so strongly about it. But previously, the responsibilities for enforcing and administering the immigration laws fell to the Justice Department, and then came 9/11 and the Bush administration's purported response to the terrorism. What you may also find interesting to know is that back in the 1940s, just before the Second World War, immigration was the responsibility of the Labor Department, because the leaders back then, remember that was the greatest generation, understood the nexus between the middle class and protecting American jobs and American salaries, and doing so by making certain that American workers did not face unreasonable competition from foreign workers. Countries, incredibly enough, you would think, are supposed to look out for their own citizens. And the immigration laws are supposed to do precisely that. And while so many politicians try to convince people that immigration is a minor fringe issue, nothing could be further from the truth. The immigration laws, America's borders, those issues go to the heart of almost every challenge and threat that confronts the United States and confronts Americans. It's not about xenophobia. It's about keeping out the bad guys, about keeping out the terrorists and aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who have been previously deported, aliens whose presence in the United States would be problematic. Perhaps aliens who would take the jobs. And yes, I do use the term aliens, and we will get to that nomenclature momentarily. But suffice it to say that I have spent the last, incredibly, 41 years being directly involved with the immigration issue. I was sworn in as an immigration inspector way back in October 1971. I became what used to be called a criminal investigator. Today the job is known as a special agent in 1975. I rotated through all the divisions within the investigations branch. I was part of the drug task force for about 10 years. Before that, I was assigned to DEA intelligence. And if you want to know a little bit more about my background, then I'm going to refer you to three excellent websites. Take out your pen. First of all, my own website, michaelcutler.net. It's a website that I'm proud of. Many of my commentaries appear there. I've been working on that website for quite some time. Again, that is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. The other website that is mine is part of And Magazine, and that website is talkborder.com. That's one word, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com. The cool thing about that website is we have videos. I'm working in conjunction with the founders and producers of And Magazine, and I am able to do video programming, and it's kind of a way of resolving a frustration that I have. I've probably appeared on over 300 television programs, doing interviews and participating in debates and the like about the immigration crisis. Again, immigration, not a single issue, but a singular issue because of its extreme importance. But as of late, the push for globalism, the push for amnesty, the push, in my judgment, for national suicide has become so great that TV does not really cover this issue nearly as frequently as they should, which is to say almost never at this point. And so by having my own ability to conduct video interviews, programs, and speak to the folks out there, I hope provides the kind of information that's not available anywhere else, to put it bluntly. And finally, I am a fellow with an organization and have been for quite some time out in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. That organization is CAPS, C-A-P-S, and that stands for Californians for Population Stabilization. I'm a senior fellow with that organization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org. Great bunch of folks. I have come to consider them good friends. It's enjoyable to be able to write to them, as do other people, to provide perspectives on just what our failures to secure America's borders and enforce America's immigration laws are really doing to this country, the impact. And you may not immediately realize it, but it is really pervasive and it is really severe. So again, those are the three websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, capsweb.org. If you want to call in, join the conversation, the number for you to call is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. I want to get started by discussing a couple of issues, but I started out talking about the word alien. Now, what is so remarkable about the word alien is that if ever you go on a television program, you appear on a radio show, you write something for organizations, and I do a lot of writing. I write op-ed pieces. Most recently, Fox News Latino published a fairly extensive article that I had written. And, so they've been giving me wonderful opportunities to get my perspective out there. But the editorial policy is to shun the word alien. Look, if we're going to be politically correct, so that we don't insult, embarrass, denigrate, dehumanize people, I'm 100% in favor of it. We've really got to be respectful of each other. It's something that I was taught by my parents, and it's a lesson that I've been teaching to my own children, to be respectful, to treat people equally and fairly. But the term alien, folks, as I've often ranted and raved about, because this really troubles me. It's hard to have an honest debate without the use of honest and accurate language. The term alien is a legal term. It appears in the Immigration and Nationality Act. It appears throughout the immigration laws because it deals with foreign nationals. And that's all that the term alien means. Legally speaking, the definition of the word alien, this is right out of the law, any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. If you can find an insult in that definition, I want to hear about it. I want to know how it's an insult to tell someone who is not an American citizen, you know what your problem is, pal? You are not a citizen or national of the United States. Boy, that is nasty language, isn't it? See, the reason that this word has become so contentious is because it accurately describes a foreign national. It creates an environment where you have to be objective and fact-driven. And the open borders folks, I've come to call them the immigration anarchists, know damn well that they can't win the debate if they have to deal with the facts. They can't win the debate if they have to deal with the law. They can't win the debate if they have to deal with common sense. And they can't win the debate if we get into this issue of what is moral and decent. They'd have you believe otherwise, but I will show you how that works. But the bottom line, they want the word alien stricken from the vocabulary, except, now this is a mind blower. I'm sure that if you're familiar with the Dream Act, with the immigration at all, you're familiar with the Dream Act. And we keep hearing about the Dream Act, how we're going to help the children. In fact, I wrote a commentary for Fox News Latino where I said that what President Obama called prosecutorial discretion, I refer to as prosecutorial deception for a bunch of reasons. It's not about Congress failing to act. Congress voted down bad legislation, not once but several times. I've testified before hearings about comprehensive immigration reform, essentially the same sort of thing. The president said this is about children. We've heard this from everybody. Now we're hearing it from the Republican side. This is about the children. But the age cutoff is age 32, your 32nd birthday. I'm on the wrong side of 60. So when someone is 30 years old, it sounds awfully young to me, but I'd love to know what society you need to live in to be considered a child if you're 30 or even 31 years of age. It doesn't make sense. but it's, again, the fantasy. It's about creating illusions, distorting the facts, and using deceptive language. The word for that, by the way, is propaganda, because we're told this is about children. And everybody starts to melt, and they get, you know, kind of doughy-eyed, and, oh, my God, the kids. Well, it's about children who came here, supposedly, by the time they were 16, but they don't have to show up until age 31. That's the cutoff, that they can go in and apply for this benefit. And if you know anything about immigration, you know that the whole system has no integrity, not the least bit of integrity. In 2006, the Washington Post ran an incredible story about how Citizenship and Immigration Services, a division of the Department of Homeland Surrender, claimed to have lost, I mean, this is unbelievable, 111,000 immigration files that related to applications for benefits, including residency, and even 30,000 aliens who this country gave citizenship to, 30,000, but did not provide the files to the adjudications officers who had to make the decision. We handed out the keys to the kingdom. And unlike many other countries in this country, the only job you can't have as a naturalized citizen is to be president or vice president. Arnold Schwarzenegger, naturalized citizen, was the governor of America's most populous state, California. Members of the military, high-ranking generals, naturalized citizens. We want people who legally immigrate to America, become citizens, to be full participants in our society, and I'm in total agreement. I think that's great. My mother, may she rest in peace, was such an immigrant. My dad's parents were such immigrants. Many people close to me came here that way, or their parents did. But the system has zero, or very close to zero, integrity. I mean, when you can naturalize 30,000 aliens without their files, what integrity are we looking at? And this occurred nearly 5 years after the terrorist attacks of 9/11. So it's mythology after mythology, nonsense after nonsense, but then they come up with the DREAM Act. And do you know what the DREAM Act stands for? It's one of those acronyms, and the government loves to use acronyms. It's an acronym for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors. Alien Minors. I mean, isn't this astonishing that the piece of legislation that every open border advocate is jumping up and down and saying, we need to pass this, we need to do this, uses the word alien right in the middle of the acronym. But don't you try it at home, because you will be accused of bigotry, racism, and God knows what else. This is such a snow job, we need to get the snow blowers out and the rock salt and the shovels. To use the word alien in the DREAM Act, because they were so adamant about incorporating the DREAM Act image in this legislation, that for that moment, the term alien was palatable. It's okay in the DREAM Act, but don't you dare refer to somebody who's present in our country and not a citizen as being an alien, because boy, oh boy, are they going to take you to task. And let's consider who some of those people are that are presently in our country. Now, again, we've got to be very clear about language and making distinctions and that sort of thing. But the first thing you have to know is that, in point of fact, not everybody who comes here is a criminal or a terrorist or a drug dealer. Very important. It's important to know that every year we admit more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants in accordance with law. They're given green cards. They are on the pathway to citizenship. So these are folks whose presence in our country is welcomed by our government. Problem, of course, is there isn't enough integrity to that program. And what this means is that we know that the bad guys, the ones that want to commit acts of terrorism or involved with the criminal organizations or the cartels, their goal is to come here, keep a low profile. The easiest way of keeping a low profile is to come here, use a false identity, and have legal status so that you don't have to worry about immigration. Of course, with the current administration, even if you are an alien who is illegally present, unless you're convicted for committing a bunch of felonies, the likelihood is that this administration will not allow ICE to take you into custody or seek to remove you. What they're probably going to do is try to figure out a way to keep you here and get you employment authorization. So we come to the first issue. I don't know if you folks remember, but just before the election, all of the newscasters, all the pundits, the analysts sitting at their desks in front of the TV cameras were scratching their heads vigorously. The dandruff was flying. It looked like a blizzard because they couldn't understand how in the world you could have 180,000 new jobs created and yet unemployment clicked up from 7.8 to 7.9%. Couldn't fathom it. Oh, my God, this doesn't make sense. And they were talking about who was falling off the list and getting on the list. What nobody, but nobody, I mean zero people were talking about was immigration. So that's one of the daunting problems when you talk about immigration to the journalists. Say immigration in conjunction with spies or terrorists or labor, and they say, oh, no, Mike, we're not doing a story about immigration. They were doing a story about spies. Well, how did they get here? Well, yes, but that's not immigration. Well, actually it is, because spies are supposed to be kept out of the United States by the immigration authorities. It's right in the immigration law. Terrorists, criminals, drug dealers, you name it, they're supposed to be kept out. But, you know, here we have journalists who are supposed to inform the public, you know, First Amendment, freedom of press, religion, speech, right to peaceably assemble, and the right to seek redress of grievances. We're not going to talk about immigration, even though the way that the terrorists got here was to game the visa process. The way that they hid in plain sight was to game the immigration system to get residency or acquire false identity documents. But we're not going to talk about immigration. We're going to talk about terrorism. And what we wind up doing as a country is being kept in the dark about just how critically important those immigration laws are, how critically important our borders are. So they sat on the set and they were talking back and forth with each other. How could it be? Look at these numbers. They just created all these jobs, but unemployment continues to go up. Let me tell you the secret. A recent published news account of Obama's prosecutorial discretion showed that roughly 3,000 aliens, and I will keep using the word alien, by the way, if it's in the DREAM Act and if it's in the law, it's in my vocabulary, and I encourage you to use that word too. It is factually, legally accurate. It's not an immoral term. It is certainly not the N-word. Any person, not a citizen or a national, is an alien, and that's exactly what we're talking about, aliens. So every day, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is apparently processing applications for this prosecutorial deception created by the administration. And what you should know is they're not doing any interviews. No one's coming into the office, folks. They're just mailing in their applications, mailing in a form, mailing in some documentation, and they are getting material back that enables them to legally work for 2 years. If this isn't an open invitation, by the way, for terrorists, and we will get to that issue very shortly, then I don't know what is. So if you do the math, and if you figure on average there are 4 weeks in a month, 20 days times three, that's 60,000 newly authorized foreign workers joining the labor pool every month, 60,000. Every month, the United States admits, round number, 100,000 lawful immigrants. Now, they aren't all workers. They may be children. They might be the dependents of the worker and so forth. So let's split it down the middle and say that 50,000 of those folks who are getting those green cards are working, 50,000. So now where are we? Well, we're up to 110,000 per month joining the workforce, and that's where this goes. Now, we look at all of the temporary worker visas. Perhaps that's good for another 10 or 15,000 a month. God only knows how many students are being authorized to take practical training and work. So that's got to be good for how many tens of thousands more. And then we have the illegal aliens. And not just people running the borders, but people coming in through ports of entry, overstaying their visas or working without authority or working on jobs to which they were not authorized to work. And then you've got the exchange visitor programs also, by the way, which generally involves jobs also. I think it is a conservative number to say that at least 250,000 foreign workers are joining the labor pool every month. Okay, so now let's go back and look at the numbers. They talked about how 180,000 new jobs were created, and then what did they say? unemployment went up. There was a study that was published in the Washington Times that said that, according to a recently done study by a nonpartisan organization, that two-thirds of all new jobs go to the newly arrived immigrants, whether they were here legal, illegally, didn't matter. Two-thirds of all new jobs are going to people newly arrived, foreign workers who newly arrived. So how difficult is it to understand the problem? If we didn't keep bringing in more foreign workers, then American workers could be put to work as we create new jobs. But we're bringing in so many foreign workers every month, more than the number of jobs that are being created, then in a manner of speaking, American workers, desperate for work, fearing that they may lose their homes to foreclosure, are being made to run up a down escalator, and that escalator, folks, is picking up speed. That's the lunacy in terms of what we are now facing today as a country. The fact that we are admitting more foreign workers every month than the number of jobs that are being created in the average month. That is a prescription for a disaster. So I just want you to think about that. The immigration laws are supposed to keep American workers from having to deal with unfair competition from foreign workers. But in this day and age, both sides of the aisle bear responsibility. It was Reagan who gave us the amnesty of 86. We were told that it would involve about 1 million to 1.5 million aliens. By the time the bureaucratic dust settled, it went between 3.5 and 4 million. And now we're being told 12 million. If we did an amnesty program and the same ratio holds true, you're looking at 30 to 40 million newly authorized, newly legalized foreign workers and others in the United States. Certainly they won't all be working, but you understand the problem. If only half or only a third are working, we're adding millions of people to the legal workforce in the United States at a time when we don't have enough jobs for everybody to go around now. One in four American children is now living below the poverty line. One in six American citizens living below the poverty line, and the solution being concocted by the idiots in Washington is to bring in more foreign workers. I mean, after all, when that airplane has every seat full, the only smart thing to do is to try to get more passengers on the airplane. Doesn't that make sense? If the restaurant runs out of food, the solution is to invite in more patrons. Where in the world, but in the government, could anything that ridiculous be considered a strategy? My gosh, it takes my breath away. But there's something even more serious going on. And today I take my hat off to two members of the United States Congress. Let me first of all start out with a salute to Mike McCaul from Texas. Mike McCaul is on the Homeland Security Committee in the House of Representatives. He commissioned a report be done. And I have read through this report. I want to go back and really digest it even more, but it is a startling report. If you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, it's posted up there, and I will be getting it up over at capsweb.org. I hope to do some interviews over at Talk Border, but right now, michaelcutler.net, it's up there. Or you can go and look it up online. But this report has the title, A Line in the Sand, Countering Crime, Violence and Terror at the Southwest Border. They did not mince words. This report is lengthy. It is detailed. It is fact-based. And it's the stuff of your worst nightmares. Here's how they issued the press release to accompany this well-done report. It says, McCaul's subcommittee report connects the dots between Iran, Hezbollah, and the Mexican drug cartels. How's that for an unholy alliance? And the press release is a short one and goes on and says, Washington, D.C., Congressman Michael McCaul, Republican, Texas, Chairman of the Homeland Security and Oversight Investigation Subcommittee, today released the report, A Line in the Sand, Countering Crime, Violence, and Terror in the Southwest Border, an assessment of the threat from drug cartels and terrorist organizations. While the original Line in the Sand report in 2006 focused primarily on Mexican drug cartel activity, this report connects the dots between Iran and Hezbollah's growing presence in Latin America and their recently documented nexus with the Mexican drug cartels. This subcommittee believes that this underscores a threat that is not fully on the radar of this administration. Not fully on the radar? That radar scope is off. It's broken. There is no radar. That was my comment, not theirs. Continuing with this press release, the subcommittee believes the presence of Iran and Hezbollah in Latin America represents a strategic migration to position terrorist operations within striking distance of the United States. If Iran is provoked, the report asserts that Hezbollah finance cells in Latin America will have the ability to turn operational. The report cites the central criticism of the 9/11 Commission was our failure to connect the dots and to use our imagination when assessing the threat landscape. This report is an attempt to be proactive and not reactive. Okay? By the way, here's the other salute, and that salute goes to Sue Myrick, Republican from North Carolina, who did an interview on a radio program. The website WND ran an excerpt from that. And here is an excerpt from the article. And again, this is reading from the WND website. Representative Sue Myrick, Republican, North Carolina, asserted in a radio interview today that she believes it's possible that Hezbollah, the radical terrorist organization tied to Iran, may be working with Mexican cartels to funnel not only drugs but also terrorist sleeper agents into the United States. Former Defense Intelligence Agency people and others have told me, that's Sue Myrick saying that, meaning that told her, that what is going on, there have been a couple of arrests in this country relative to people who have had ties to Hezbollah or Iran, and my concern has been with the drug cartels and the gangs that are operating in Mexico, Myrick said. There is, what I've been told, a very strong presence there of coordination between the two. Now, what's really interesting was back in March, I wrote a commentary where I said that Iran was in the position to attack the United States if we or our allies attacked their nuclear program. Some things you may not know. It is now believed that there are more people of Lebanese extraction or background living in Latin America than in the Middle East. It's remarkable. Now, that, again, we have to be careful about generalities. There are many people from Lebanon who are decent, peaceful, wonderful human beings. But the problem is that when you're dealing with radical Islam, if you're dealing with a population of millions, and we are, if only 1, 2, or 3% are radical, think of the numbers. Think what 19 terrorist dirtbags did to the United States on September 11th, 2001, and they weren't the only ones. See, our government has this ability to ignore what happens and not learn from mistakes. My dad was a smart guy. He was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He'll always be my biggest hero. And he always used to say to me, Mike, there's no such thing as a mistake in life if you learn from it. If something goes wrong and you learn and do things differently from that point forward, that wasn't a mistake, it was a lesson. But to repeatedly do the same dopey things repeatedly over and over again to my father was inexcusable and would drive him right up the wall. It must be genetic, I react the same way. Albert Einstein, I believe, famously remarked that his idea of insanity was to do the same thing the same way and expect a different outcome. In 1993, the United States faced two terrorist attacks. A guy by the name of Amil Kansi, a Pakistani national to whom we gave political asylum, repaid America's kindness, generosity, and frankly, incompetence, because he lied and they never caught him for those lies. And in exchange for political asylum, he stood outside CIA headquarters in January of 93 with an AK-47. Back then, at least, we know the gun didn't come from Fast and Furious, that wacky ATF-alleged investigation that put thousands of high-powered weapons in the hands of the cartel. But he stood outside the CIA with an AK-47, opened fire, killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, fled the country, thought he was free of us, wasn't counting on the ability of our people to track him down, drag him back here, put him on trial, find him guilty, and ultimately he was executed, but the people he killed remained dead. 1 month later, first attack at the World Trade Center. Again, we were dealing with aliens who had gamed the visa process, gamed the immigration benefits program successfully, killed six people, injured probably about 1,000, inflicted at the time $500 million in damage at the iconic World Trade Center. Tower almost came down sideways had that happened. You probably would have had, hundreds of thousands of fatalities and casualties. Lower Manhattan might still be underwater. Look what happened when the hurricane struck. It took weeks to pump out the Battery Tunnel. Let me tell you, if those towers came down and the seawall went and so forth, I don't even know when we would get Lower Manhattan back, if ever. So that was the magnitude of the attack. And in fact, I did my very first congressional hearing in May of 1997, May 20th, about visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud, because clearly there were people in Washington who looked at those two attacks and said, yes, we are letting terrorists into our country, and yes, through our incompetence, we're giving them immigration benefits. One of the attackers, by the way, of the Trade Center in 93 was a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima. He got amnesty as an agricultural worker, and the only thing that this cretin grew, the only thing he ever planted, was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. He was a livery cab driver. The closest he ever came to a farm was when he drove by Central Park in Manhattan. So we don't learn the lessons. And then, of course, we had in 2001, the first attack. It was preventable if the Clinton administration had been willing to learn the lessons that those two attacks of 93 should have taught them. And here we are again. Here we are again where Chuck Schumer, who chairs the Senate Immigration Subcommittee, comes out and says that he has this plan. He has an immigration platform with four solid planks. I couldn't help myself, folks. I wrote a commentary for CAPSWeb.org for Californians of Population Stabilization. And I decided to use a little bit of sarcasm, which I've been known to do. And I wrote and said that Schumer's immigration platform is built on planks made of balsa wood. Just to give you the four real quickly. He said, we're going to close the border. And I said, where on earth is the border? Everyone keeps thinking that the border is just the Mexican border. You know, we heard that from Jonathan Huntsman when he was one of the early candidates for the presidency. He was one of the first to drop out. And he said, well, if I'm elected president, I'll talk to the governors of the four border states. You mean the states along the northern border don't count? States that have seaports don't count? Do you have any miles of coastline the United States has, by the way, folks? Here's a good question if you're ever on Jeopardy. According to a book written by a Coast Guardsman, and I'm going to suspect that he knows from whence he speaks, we have 95,000 miles of coastline. So any state that has access to open waterways that can get you to the ocean needs to be thought of as a border state. And any international airport needs to be thought of as an international port of entry, which in fact it is. So any state that has a seaport, shares a long a land border with Mexico or Canada, or any state that has an international airport is a border state. And when illegal aliens run our borders or otherwise enter the United States, they are not generally confined to the area where they entered. They head for the rest of the country. Every state, ladies and gentlemen, is a border state. And if you're not willing to accept that, and if you're in charge of creating strategies to defend America, we are screwed. We are screwed. Do you know how many boat holes you need to have in the bottom of your boat for your boat to sink? Only one. Only one. So if you focus on five holes and leave that sixth hole open, that sixth hole is going to get your boat to the bottom of the lake. And that's what we're dealing with here. We are dealing with politicians that have an agenda. The agenda is to get campaign contributions, to curry favor with the people with deep pockets or the special interest groups, whether it's the banks or the immigration lawyers or the corporations or the groups that purport to help the immigrants. Goodness, and we can talk about that. They're just looking for votes and money. That's what politicians do. You know, termites look for wood, politicians look for money and votes. I hate to compare them to termites, but I get so damn frustrated and angry sometimes because they are in a feeding frenzy all the time and they are blinded by their own selfish needs, except for a few notable exceptions. Certainly, Mike McCall demonstrated that. Certainly, Sue Myrick demonstrated that. Certainly, I can tell you that Jeff Sessions, Senator from Alabama, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, Congressman Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania, Congressman Steve King from Iowa. These are folks I have worked with personally. They are amazing. They are leaders. There are a few others out there, but the majority of those characters on Capitol Hill, what can I say? They built our Capitol on swampland, on landfill. I can't imagine anything more appropriate than that. Because if you're looking at the threats being posed by terrorists, and then you're coming up with these ridiculous arguments, this is not, a debate about how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. This isn't some academic argument where we're going to have a discussion about good versus evil. Lives are hanging in the balance, folks. America's future hangs in the balance. That's how serious this debate is. And by the way, for the record, this is not a conservative issue, and it's not a liberal issue. It's an American issue. I've been registered as a Democrat my whole life. Please understand this. This is about the survival of our country. This is about the lives of our citizens. Congressman Steve King commissioned a study based on some testimony I gave at a hearing where he had asked some questions of me, and he was able to find out that about 7,000 people die in America each year because of criminal aliens operating within our borders. 7,000 a year. It's remarkable. If, God forbid, an airplane crashes and 200 people die, it makes headlines and everybody shakes and vibrates. And, oh, my God, this is awful. Well, every year the little drumbeat goes on. That means several times a day, decent people are losing their lives to people who didn't belong in the United States in the first place, whether they were run down by drunk drivers, run over by a driver without a driver's license, killed in a shootout by drug dealers, or some other violent act. This is what we are importing into the United States, death and destruction. Again, this is not about vilifying immigrants. America certainly was built by people from around the world. I live in the most ethnically diverse city, not only in the United States, I would argue in the world, and that's New York City. If I was xenophobic, I am certainly in the wrong town. New York is my town. I was born and raised here, went to Brooklyn College. I am a New Yorker. I don't want to live in a town that's not diverse. But I don't believe that honest diversity includes murderers, thugs, drug dealers, and drug addicts. And that's what the immigration laws are supposed to do, to protect decent people who just want to get on with their lives and have an opportunity to use their talents, their motivation, their abilities to succeed. And it is becoming increasingly impossible because that whole process is being undermined by a failure to secure America's borders and properly and effectively enforce our immigration laws. Now, number two, Schumer says, we're going to create a non-forgeable document. It's remarkable because Mayor Giuliani, America's mayor, made the same offer during the prior presidential campaign 4 years ago. We're going to have a tamper-proof identity document. Well, first of all, nothing is tamper-proof. You issue a new identity document, you give the counterfeiters 3 days, they'll be cranking them out. But you want to make a document that is as close to tamper-proof as you can make it, tamper-resistant. Just like the Kevlar I used to wear, my ballistic vest when I went out to make arrests, wasn't bulletproof. Everyone says, oh, it's a bulletproof. It's bullet-resistant. You hope. You pray. So forget about this thing being tamper-proof. But the bigger issue that nobody is addressing is what name do you put on these documents if these people are undocumented? What does undocumented mean? It means they have no official paperwork to attest to who they are. And there are names on terror watch lists and no-fly lists that don't have any matching biometric. So if someone like that can get a new identity document and a new name, they can obfuscate the truth that they are a threat to national security. They can then use the documents that Mr. Schumer wants to give them to get driver's licenses and Social Security cards and library cards, which means internet access with anonymity. They can get credit cards and get jobs that may not have national security implications but may well have critical infrastructure implications. I certainly worry about who handles the food that we eat, for example, critical infrastructure. It's not just nuclear power plants, airports, and military bases, although those are certainly worrying enough. And by the way, while we're on the topic of military bases, why on earth would you want illegal aliens to join the military when you can't prove who they are? I mean, someone's got to give some thought to what we did with the Zetas in Mexico. The Zetas were the elite law enforcement and military people who were trained in America's tactics, purportedly, to fight the drug cartels. So the Zetas took the training, the Zetas took the weapons, and then they took over. They took over the drug trade. They are among the most violent and pernicious drug gangs in Mexico. We don't learn. No one's bothering to read the history books, and these history books are recent. The ink isn't even dry, and we're repeating the same mistakes over and over again. So now we get to item number three, letting in the immigrants that we need, Chuck Schumer. Well, let's remind Chuck Schumer and everybody else out there that he held a hearing April 30th, 2009, where he brought in that genius of economic brilliance, Alan Greenspan, who I would argue was the architect of the meltdown. And Greenspan has made it clear he wants to bring in as many foreign workers as he can possibly drag into the United States, and he laid it out. And if you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, or you can reach me and I'll send you the video, you could go to the Senate website. They still have the video. You could see this guy sitting there and saying it as he drones on in that monotonous voice of his. And here's what he said about bringing in foreign workers. The second bonus in accelerating the influx of skilled immigrant workers would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Concentration of income. You catch those words, folks? Let me read on. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over lesser skilled. Did you catch that? Let's go over this again. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled. In other words, letting in lots more skilled workers, educated workers, computer programmers, technicians, right? If we did that, we could lower wage premiums. Not wages, but wage premiums. So if you're making more than minimum wage, I guess, in Greenspan's world, that's a wage premium that we got to cut. Of course, we all know that Alan Greenspan, with his house in the Hamptons, is living at minimum wage. He sits there and barely has enough butter to put on a slice of toast in the morning. So this guy has the chutzpah to talk about lowering wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. How dare we pay more money to people who have skills or education? What a country. Skill shortages, his words again, skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. In the process, we have created privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Income inequality is a bad thing if it's based on gender, if it's based on race, if it's based on ethnicity. No argument from me, and I'm sure no argument from you. But that's not what he's saying. He is talking about income inequality that is based on skill and education. I thought that was called the American dream. When I was a child, my mom came here, by the way, as a teenage girl, lived in a rooming house, got here just ahead of the Holocaust. She was 14 when she came here, made all of $3 a week working in an umbrella factory, but she had pounded it into my head by the time I was five that I was going to go to college. I didn't even know what college was. I mean, I was 5 years old, but I knew one day I was going to go there. I didn't know if it was the beach. I didn't know if it was a tall building, but I knew I was going to college because that was the key to success in America. Acquire skills, acquire an education. When people ask my dad, what do you do for a living, Saul? Because my dad's name obviously was Saul. He would say, I'm a plumber by trade. Because by saying by trade, it meant that he was a journeyman. He went through an apprenticeship. He wasn't some amateur Mr. Fix-It, and we need those folks too. I don't want to make light of those guys. But the point was my dad worked on construction sites. He was the guy that helped to put together the buildings. He and his buddies built America. They still do. We hear about the work Americans won't do. I want to puke when I hear that kind of language. You look at hardworking blue-collar Americans who work in the coal mines and the steel foundries, the guys that are driving the garbage trucks and being subjected to all kinds of filth, the construction workers whose jobs, by the way, are more dangerous than law enforcement jobs. Their jobs are backbreaking. They are dangerous jobs. They're filthy jobs. So we hear this nonsense. But what they're saying here is, doesn't matter if you're a tradesman or a laborer, doesn't matter if you have a public school education or you have a PhD, Alan Greenspan wants equality in wages. I thought that was called communism, but then what do I know? You know, to each according to his needs, from each according to his ability. So Greenspan has the chutzpah to refer to Americans who have skills as the privileged elite. But what does he know about the privileged elite? And finally, Chuck Schumer says we need a pathway to citizenship that's fair. Well, you know what, folks? That system already exists. Because every year we put 1.1 million plus aliens on the pathway to citizenship by giving them a green card. Within 5 years, they can legally naturalize if they're married to an American. They can do it in 3 years. They can do it in even less time if they join the military. So this business about a system that's fair, and he says, well, we're going to do this for these people. They're undocumented, but we're going to make them wait on the end of the line. The end of the line. Isn't that an interesting way of saying it? We're going to put those folks on the end of the line. Where is the line? It's not in their home country. So you violate our borders. You violate the laws. You lie about when you got here. You lie about who you are. And we will put you on the end of the line. But that line is inside the United States of America. And once you're on that line, you will get employment authorization. So on the day that they put you on the end of the line, folks, you can start working. You can start sending money home. And by the way, every year, foreign workers send home probably over $100 billion a year. That's money that is completely and utterly lost to the American economy. That's money that's not spent or invested in America. The whole idea to the economic stimulus package was to pump money into the economy so people would spend the money and that would get more people working. Except who are we getting working? Foreign workers who are going to be standing on the end of Mr. Schumer's mythical line. It sounds good, but the closer you look, the worse it smells. This is a fantasy created by Chuck Schumer and other politicians who are being dishonest. I mean, forgive me for being redundant and talking about dishonest politicians. But this is all a smokescreen. So when you look at all of this and you look at the concerns they have about sleeper agents, Sue Myrick was right. Sue Myrick was right on the money. Mike McCall was right on the money. Robert Mueller, the head of the FBI, has testified before congressional hearings about his concerns about sleeper agents, and I have also. So what this does is to provide ample opportunities for an alien to come to the United States by running the border, perhaps involved with the cartels, perhaps involved with terrorist organizations, get an official identity document in a false name, embed themselves, and ultimately attack us. The 9/11 Commission did some investigating, as you would have imagined. I was happy to be able to provide written declarations for them, written testimony. They were able to identify 94 terrorists operating in the United States in the decade leading up to 9/11. Of the 94, 59 used visa fraud or immigration benefit fraud to enter the country and then hide themselves in plain sight, or in their language, embed themselves. So now we are dealing with a system that has no integrity, where 3,000 aliens per day under the Obama program is prosecutorial discretion, deception, excretion, whatever word you want to use to describe it. 3,000 aliens per day without face-to-face interviews are being granted official identity documents. God only knows if it's really their name on the document. This is insanity. The TSA is out there strip-searching 85-year-old women who are incontinent and wearing diapers. They are out there groping four-year-old little girls who run back to grandma because they're startled when they find themselves at an airport. If some guy who's 90 years old and wearing glasses thick enough to stop around from a 357 pushes the wrong knob on the wrong door in the airport and the alarms go off, the whole place goes into lockdown, you know? And they bring the airplanes back to the gate and they unload the baggage, and the schedules of airlines around the world go to hell in a handbasket because Mr. Magoo opened the wrong door. But when thousands upon thousands of aliens charge our border every day, we don't know who they are or why they're here. Obviously, they know they can't pass scrutiny, which is why they're not going through the legal system. That's fine. And the open borders folks say, well, they entered undocumented. Really? Really? They entered undocumented. What does that mean? They won't use the word illegally. They didn't. They won't say, oh, no, they entered illegally. Oh, no. They entered undocumented. So the image you have is, gee, I left my library card home. I don't have my cards with me. Can I come in anyway? No. What they did was to sneak in. And when someone sneaks in, it's obvious they're doing so because whatever it is they have in mind is not in accordance with our own best interests. You know, I like to tell people that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. You know, we all like to have company come over, folks, but not when they climb through our bedroom window at 3 o'clock in the morning. And functionally, that is what we're talking about. But the open borders crowd says, oh, no, they just entered undocumented. They couldn't be bothered with those pesky papers. We are in the middle of a war. We have American kids coming home in body bags, American kids coming home missing limbs, American kids coming home suffering post-traumatic stress, suffering every kind of horror show injury imaginable. We're sending them in harm's way to protect America, to combat terrorism. And we're doing everything as a country to undermine their valor and their sacrifices. One of the things that I do is to participate in a speakers bureau, Alan L. Freed Associates in Washington. Very happy to work with them. I've been working with them for years. Great organization. And they conduct seminars for government agencies, for the military, intelligence services, and the like. And I was standing in front of a room full of Air Force brass, colonels mostly and generals. And I always like to get my audience's attention. And I said, folks, why on earth do we still have a military? Well, imagine saying that to a bunch of generals, right? I thought I was going to have to duck. I wasn't wearing body armor. And they were angry, and I understood why they were angry, but I got their attention. And they said, but here's the point, folks. Is it not true that the mission, the primary mission of all of our men and women in the armed forces, regardless of which of the five branches they're in, their primary mission is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible? Well, they all agreed. Heads all nodded up and down in agreement. I said, well, how in the world can you accomplish your primary objective when our borders only exist on maps, and we already have, I don't buy this figure of millions, I would say tens of millions of illegal aliens in our country, and we have no way of knowing who they are or why they're here. When I got done speaking, a number of those generals and colonels came up to me to shake hands with me and tell me I was exactly right. So please understand that when you're being told this pablum, this nonsense, this propaganda, it's not true. Immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue. It's not insignificant. It goes to the crux of what's going on that's wrong. There was an article not long ago that was done, or a news report that was done on CBS News, and it was entitled, Mexican Drug Cartels Fight Turf Battles in Chicago. Jack Riley, the SAC, special agent in charge of the DEA office that covers Chicago and other cities, said that there were neighborhoods in Chicago, Illinois, that resembled Mexican border towns, and now Chicago is going to give driver's licenses to illegal aliens. You know, this runs so contrary not only to national security, and it's a major threat to national security, but it is also a threat to community safety. And this is the thing that I want everybody to understand. Please bear with me, but this is really important, and if you've heard me say it before, you know, we have a caller holding. Let me see if who we have here. Hello,
hey,
you're talking to Mike Cutler.
Michael, it's Lauren Martell. Happy day after Thanksgiving.
Hiya, Lauren Martell. How are you? Happy Thanksgiving, a day late to you as well. How are you, young lady?
I'm doing fabulously. South Carolina,
I hope you weren't waiting
beautiful.
Too long.
Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. I hope you weren't waiting too long.
No. And I loved everything you had to say. It was extremely informative and very, very true. I'm looking at the document on your email today, the U.S. House of Representatives
yep.
Committee on Homeland Security document.
Yes.
And that's dated November 2012.
Yep.
So it's got a lot of interesting information in there. So one of my concerns as I scroll down through the document was the continued threat of Hezbollah
yep.
and Hamas. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. And you know, when I was in South Carolina for the Tea Party convention, I spoke a bit about my concerns about terrorism. And you know, of course, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be back this January for the next get-together, the next convention. So I'm very excited about that.
That's going to be extremely well attended, and we are very much looking forward to having you be a keynote speaker there. I know South Carolina always welcomes our friend from New York City.
Well, it's very sweet of you to say it and to put it in those terms, but I'm so much looking forward to it. We have to grab a meal while I'm down in your neck of the woods. You know, Hezbollah is the client terrorist organization, if you will, of Iran. And Iran right now is ramping up. They admitted that they were furnishing components to those missiles that were being used against Tel Aviv by Hamas. So it's clear. I mean, they're not just hiding out in the shadows doing things covertly. This is a wacky bunch of leaders. They are sociopathic. They are spoiling for a fight. They are apparently doubling their capabilities to refine uranium to make it weapons grade by doubling the number of centrifuges just within the past couple of weeks from what I've been reading. We know that they have Quds forces arriving weekly in direct flights flying from Tehran, Iran, to Caracas, Venezuela. I assure you, Lauren, that they are not coming for R&R. They're not coming for rest and relaxation. They are coming because they are being pre-positioned, which is exactly what the findings were of that report by Congressman McCall. They are loading. They are loading them up, just like when we went to fight in the Middle East. We sent all of our airplanes over. If you remember, in the days before shock and awe, all the fighter planes were heading across the Atlantic Ocean to head out to the theater. He is loading up his forces in our hemisphere, and he's been very clear that if anybody, including Israel, attacks Iran, he's going to make sure that America is made to feel the consequences. Now, you know, not long ago, there was an attempt made to kill the Saudi ambassador in Washington. They were planning to blow up the Saudi embassy, possibly take out the Israeli embassy as well. And this was going to be done by members of the Quds forces, their shock troops, who were operating across that Mexican border. Fortunately, our people got the drop on them, and we ended that threat. But the point is, we know that this is exactly how they operate. My biggest concern, Lauren, is that if these folks get closer and closer to that weapon, whether we go in, whether Israel goes in, whether Europe goes in and NATO goes in and says, look, this is a threat that we are not willing to accept, that we will see things blowing up inside the United States. We need to be focused on airplanes. I do a lot of flying, as you can imagine. I don't want to get a window seat on what becomes a de facto cruise missile. But that's only one of how many ways that terrorists could kill lots of people. I worry about who handles our food. I worry about the potential of places where large numbers of people gather, whether it's sporting events or public areas. America, as an open society, really is at risk because we are open, and I don't want to change that. You know, Ben Franklin said, if you exchange freedom, security for freedom, you'll have neither. But
we've already gotten a lot of extra security, just like you mentioned with TSA and even going into movie theaters now. Some of them check people's purses and things like that, and not everyone's purses. So it's just a little bit arbitrary in some of those things. But I do have another question about what you think about the power grid and what the possibility of not just necessarily the physical blowing up of things, but more of, you know, taking down grids and things like that. And then my second question is, within this document, you mentioned something of the Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, the OFAC.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering what, if anything, that department is actually physically doing to try to just defund some of these enemies that we have, rather than it seems like we're just overtly giving them money to fight against us. So we're literally not helping ourselves at all as Americans by doing that.
No, we don't help ourselves. Look, there are two ways that I worry about the grid, and even if it's not done by terrorism, even a coronal mass ejection from the sun, a solar flare of great enough magnitude could take out the grid as well. We really need to be able to harden our grids. against EMP, electromagnetic pulse, which can come from a coronal mass ejection from the sun or from a nuclear weapon that could be detonated by Iran. Look, we know that eventually they're going to get that weapon unless we Israel, or somebody else intervenes. And the threat of a nuclear weapon isn't only in killing people by blast or radiation. It's that if you do it high enough up, you could take out the power grid by inducing a huge current in the electrical grid, and that could be devastating. So there's so many ways that we're vulnerable. Now, you're talking about currency and trade. One of the things that keeps on happening is we keep getting businessmen coming to the United States. They naturalize. What I find astonishing is that very often ICE or the U.S. attorney or the FBI will refer to somebody as a Houston man or a Los Angeles man. And then you read into it and you find out that the guy was a naturalized citizen or had a green card. But this, there is a reluctance to be honest and say, hey, you know what? The way that this guy got into the United States, he's not homegrown. They keep using the term homegrown terrorists and that kind of business. We don't recognize the fact that political asylum is a ploy that is commonly used by terrorists. There was a story that I had written about 2 years ago about an individual by the name of Fez Hazian, who had entered the United States from Eritrea, claimed political asylum. Within 6 weeks, we gave him political asylum. And the way that the story evolved was he ultimately gets arrested and charged with smuggling aliens from Africa into the United States through Guatemala. So at the time that he claimed that he was running for his life in Eritrea, he was actually running from the federales in Guatemala. Now, what was infuriating to me was they prosecuted him for the smuggling of aliens, and he probably will get 2 or 3 years. It's amazing, a slap on the wrist. There was nothing in the press release about any efforts made to locate the aliens he smuggled in, even though we know that some of the countries from which these aliens came are associated with Al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. And there was nothing in the report that said that they were prosecuting him for lying on his application for political asylum. Now, this is really important, not just because symbolically we didn't prosecute him, but it means that when he gets out of jail because he was granted political asylum, we will likely allow him to continue to live in the United States. Whereas if they had gone after him for political asylum fraud, they would strip him then of political asylum protection and deport him. So here's this guy, 23 years old, we're going to be stuck with him forever, who I really worry about the nexus between him and terrorism and smuggling activities, and rather than use all the arrows in the quiver and shoot him with the arrow that says immigration fraud, because we know that that's how terrorists operate and smugglers of terrorists operate, they ignored it. And so it was kind of interesting, because going back to the McCall report, they talked about the Ahmed Dakhani human smuggling operation. And they said that Ahmed Mohammed Dakhani, did you read that?
Yes, I did.
Well, just for those of you out there, I'll just read this real briefly, was convicted in the United States District Court in the Western District of Texas for making false statements while seeking asylum in the United States, very much like this guy, Fez Hazian. Dakhani, a citizen of Somalia, another special interest country, meaning a country associated with terrorism, failed to disclose to DHS officials that he was affiliated with Somali organizations involved with terrorism. So they go after him for lying about that. And then eventually, during the course of the investigation, they found out that he was running a large-scale smuggling operation through Brazil. Brazil is where the tri-border region now has a huge presence of Hamas, Hezbollah, and Al-Qaeda terror camps, training camps. So he was smuggling aliens from Brazil into the United States and also East Africans. Again, same problem with the Al-Qaeda presence. Dakhani also told investigators he made as much as $75,000 in one day by smuggling Somalis. Okay?
This is criminal activity, though. Why is it going unprosecuted?
He was prosecuted for that part of it. But my point is, look at the nexus between alien smuggling and applications for political asylum. Now, look at the way they are ramming applications through Citizenship and Immigration Services. You know, I don't know if you know this, Lauren, but they move something like 6 to 7 million applications per year through Citizenship and Immigration Services. There's only about 500 or 600 general investigators who are supposed to work with them to see that there's some kind of integrity to this process. There is no integrity. So when we read about this guy Dakhani, when we read about Fez Hazian, those were the guys that get caught. But how many times have you been on the highway and 20 cars go speeding by you, and maybe the cop gets one guy who's driving like a madman, and the other 19 continue on their merry way? Well, here, the madmen that are continuing on their merry way may have a direct involvement with terrorist plans, either inside the United States or to go back to Afghanistan or whatever and do damage to our troops. In fact, there was another story, and I just wrote another piece about that, about how they just arrested four guys, and they were also involved with terrorism, three of whom, by the way, were resident aliens. One guy became a United States citizen. He was actually caught in Afghanistan. Another one involved with this group was Mexican. Again, that nexus between Mexico and the Middle East. And this guy was in the middle of applying for United States citizenship. So when you look at this nexus between immigration and national security, and you have an administration that refuses to make certain that there's integrity to the immigration system, we are inviting people into this country who may not simply be looking to mow someone's lawn or put up a new roof on their house. We're talking about people who are looking to kill us. In fact, I just have the names here just so you get an idea of what we're talking about. The defendants in this most recent terrorism case.
Was that the Holy Land case, the Holy Land trial?
No, this is a different one. This just happened. Sohail Omar Kabir, 34, former resident of Pomona, California, and a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Afghanistan. Well, guess what? They arrested him in Afghanistan, this naturalized U.S. citizen. Ralph DeLeon, 23, of Ontario, California, a lawful permanent resident alien born in the Philippines. Miguel Alejandro Santana Vidriales, further described herein and in the criminal complaint to Santana, 21 years old, of Upland, California, a lawful permanent resident born in Mexico whose application for citizenship is pending. And finally, Arafin David Gojali, 21, they simply identify him as a United States citizen. I don't know if he naturalized or perhaps was born here of Pakistani parents. So the point of the matter is that the nexus between immigration and national security is so crystal clear to everybody except the administration and except to members of Congress. And you know, the point that I started to make when I realized you were on the line, and I just want to make this quickly because this is important for everyone to understand. We're hearing now in the wake of the election that in order to garner the Latino vote, this mythical vote, which is one of the most insidious forms of profiling and insulting beyond words, just as I get upset when I hear about the Jewish vote or the black vote or the Latino vote. It's
profiling. We're not too happy about Lindsey Graham's position on that, too, but that's just a sidebar.
No, but you're right, Lauren. But this is a kind of insidious profiling. How can you look at someone's skin color or the fact that I wear a Jewish star and say, oh, we know who those folks are going to vote for? But what they're saying is, if you want this mythical Latino vote, and I hear a lot of people who are Latino tell me this all the time, that they agree with me and they're angry as hell. What this really means is that more and more people who are competing unfairly with them for their jobs will be getting those jobs. And when people ignore or evade the inspections process, it's very often because they're part of gangs. So by increasing the number of illegal aliens in communities, and that's what you're doing, and I don't care if we give these folks legal status, my concern is how they got here in the first place, evading scrutiny, hiding in the shadows when they entered. Forget about hiding in the shadows afterwards. It's that they hid in the shadows in order to get here. You wind up with gangs in these neighborhoods. And the most likely victims of the gang violence are the members of the same ethnicity, and it's their children that are being recruited. And by the way, it's not just within the Latino community. It's within the Asian community, the Russian community, the Caribbean community. You know, and I saw this firsthand. This isn't conjecture. I spent 10 years with the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, and I spent years, by the way, where the people I was investigating and arresting weren't from Latin America. They were from Jamaica, they were from Panama, they were from China. And yes, they were from Latin America as well. But the point is that this is a phenomenon that, you know, spans the globe, as they say. So this idea that the way to make the Latino people happy is to bring in more competition for their jobs and more people who may pose a threat to their physical well-being and the well-being of their children is lunacy. This is like saying that if you put cheese on a mousetrap, you're just trying to feed hungry mice.
Right. Well, it appears that we're not, you know, there's, from the Holy Land trial, which did happen back in 2008, there's 30-some-odd unindicted co-conspirators, which means that they were found to be co-conspirators, and yet there's been nothing done to prosecute those people. So it seems like there's an epic fail on the part of those that would enforce these laws.
But in some cases, what it is they find that the evidentiary bar is too high that they can't meet. But again, this is where the administrative side of immigration is so important. See, the way it works, this emphasis on criminal aliens, and I worked with Senator Al D'Amato back in the early 80s to create a separate law that made reentry for criminals after deportation a 20-year crime and to focus on criminals. But to do it exclusively and ignore non-criminal aliens, then we're missing an important opportunity. If you have an alien who is working in conjunction with a terrorist organization, working in conjunction with a criminal organization, you can't indict that person because you don't reach that level of evidence where you're likely to get a conviction. And, you know, when you go to the U.S. attorneys, it's a remarkable process. You don't automatically get people prosecuted because you find that they broke the law. The U.S. attorney has prosecutorial discretion in those instances, and they decide whether they're going to accept the case. They almost want you to bring a jury in with you and says, yep, the guy's guilty, because they're worried about their conviction ratio. So they're selective. So they look at a case and say, you know, this is going to be a hard case to do. It's not worth the resources. Fine. Then that alien should immediately be put into deportation proceedings to get him or her out of the United States.
Right.
But here what we're seeing is where they break up a smuggling ring or a fraud ring. Oh, the fraud ring has been operating for 8 years, and this guy made $3 million, and he brought in 500 aliens, and there's never an effort made to find the aliens. So how does that deter other illegal aliens from going to other people that smuggle them in when they know that even if the smuggling ring is discovered, the likelihood is that no one's even going to look for them anyway? How crazy is that,
Lauren? Well, it seems like the evidentiary bar and the line in the sand, you know, that was actually the title, I think, that they put on it in 2006, right? The line in the sand confronting the threat at the southwest border, just ends up either the bar is getting lower or the line in the sand is just getting, you know, closer and closer in. And instead of, you know, it actually being an absolute, it just seems like America's been the one compromised through the whole process.
And we're being compromised every day of the week, and this is not victimless crimes. You know, I just wrote another story about a gang of thugs working in conjunction with MS-13, which is a violent gang that has its origins in California and El Salvador and Guatemala, mostly El Salvador, where they were coercing young girls to go into prostitution, and they were trafficking them all the way from Delaware down to Virginia and every place in between, because most of their clientele were people working in restaurants and construction sites. So look what's happening. You have illegal aliens who are here by themselves. They leave their wives and their girlfriends home. So they're bringing prostitutes to them. In one case, in this particular story, it was pretty disgusting. The young lady was 15 years old, coerced into working for a bunch of these guys, so they would take turns trafficking her to different people all up and down that portion of the eastern seaboard. And,
yeah, that's,
you know,
a crime on so many levels. You know,
yes,
that's statutory rape right there.
Yes, of course. But you see, we used to raid the hooker houses, and you know, we used to joke about it afterwards. You developed gallows humor. We would take over the buzzes, so we'd be buzzing in the clientele. 90% of the clientele were themselves illegal aliens. So we used to joke that a lot of guys got screwed, but they weren't getting any sex because we were deporting these people at least. Today,
thank God.
Yes, but today we're not doing that. Today, this administration wants to give employment authorization to everybody and anybody. And in fact, I know Senator Sessions, and I wasn't able to go on Neil Cavuto because they wanted me to come on to talk about it. I had a FEMA conflict. I had to take care of my home because of the storm. But
right.
Senator Sessions, who's one of the good guys out there, he's one of my heroes, said, look, this doesn't make sense. The administration is handing out literature to the newly arrived immigrants, telling them about all the welfare benefits that they can get. You know, we've got to stop waving a thick steak in front of people who are hungry from around the world. Do I feel bad for people living in poverty? Yes, I do, Lauren. But you know something? The world's population is well over 7 billion. well over half of those folks are living in poverty. We can't bring the world here, but we can bring America down. And, you know, I look at America kind of like a lifeboat. And
yes.
You reach a point where you overload a lifeboat and everybody in the boat is doomed because the boat capsizes and sinks. America's sinking, folks. We are bringing in more foreign workers every month than new jobs that are being created. We are, I'm telling you, running up and down escalator. We are making it easy for terrorists and criminals to spread out across the country. While Napolitano insists that our borders are secure, she also talks about how hundreds of American cities have become infested by the Mexican cartels. Well, if the Mexican cartels are infesting American cities and the drugs that are being used on streets around America are only produced outside the United States, specifically heroin and cocaine, then it's a clear measure. I mean, that's the metric. Our borders are not secure. And so when we hear this nonsense about whether or not the borders are secure, and then you look at the amount of money, and please go look at that report, folks, the tens of billions of dollars being generated by the drug trade in Latin America that is going right into the coffers, not only of the cartels, but terrorist organizations that have in their sights America. They want to eradicate the United States and our way of life. While we're being tolerant of everybody, they are utterly intolerant. They are so intolerant that they are killing people of the same faith, but a different brand. As bad as it was in Northern Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestants, those guys look like a lover's spat compared to what goes on in the Middle East between the warring factions of Islam. And let me tell you, there is no dispute among any of them that anyone who's Christian or Jewish, I'm talking about the radicals now, not the non-radicals, I want to be very clear, but for the radicals, if you're an infidel, that means that you're Jewish or Christian or any other religion, you're the enemy. And we are giving these people more money than they know what to do with it, and believe me, they will find something to do with that money, and it will not be good for this country or for Americans. So, you know, the primary responsibility of any government is to keep the enemies out of that country, to keep their citizens safe. Safety is the number
one
issue.
Well, you know, Mike, I've read the Iranian Constitution, and that's got nothing to do necessarily with the religion per se. That's more the doctrine and the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty clear that they want to, you know, take over the Western civilization. It's documented that what they're supposed to do and what their mission is. And, you know, I would submit to you that through oil as well, you know, since we're every time we go to the gas station, we're really paying, you know, to fund some of our enemies, either from Venezuela or in the Middle East. And, you know, so I think without
they're on a rampage.
Have
no mistake about this one, folks. Iran and its friends are on a rampage, and we are in their sights.
Right.
You know, there comes
and it's
a time
real easy
when you
to read their constitution. It's translated from Farsi, and I think all Americans should be aware of what is in that doctrine, because it's not about religion at all, really. That should not be the debate of the day.
Right.
What
no,
really
no, no,
should
it,
be
it,
the
it's
debate.
About, it's about what their political agenda is. Their political agenda is world domination.
Right.
And we stand in the way. And believe me, these folks are not bashful about going to war. They welcome it. They welcome it. Why else would you give weapons that could reach Tel Aviv and then go public and say, by the way, you know those rockets that are landing on Tel Aviv? We made it possible. Now what are you going to do about it? I mean, there is nothing covert about this. They're telegraphing their punches, and we are playing right into their hands, and it's inconceivable. So when I look at the opportunities being given to the terrorists, not only to enter the United States, but then to embed themselves here. You know, it's remarkable. I testified at that hearing back in March of 2002 about Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, two of the dead terrorists when they were given authorization to attend flight school. And at the time, Gikas was the chairman of the subcommittee. And he said, we must make certain this never happens again, that terrorists don't even get to come close to our borders, but that if anybody ever does, that we will hunt them down and find them immediately so that this doesn't happen. And then you look at where we are 11 years later. You know, there was another article that I based on a report that was so disturbing. Do you know how many schools, Lauren, are authorized to bring in foreign students right now?
It's got to be a lot, because I know the man from Turkey, Gulen, has set up a whole bunch of charter schools within the United States, the Gulen schools. So.
Yes, they featured him. But at least those are for real schools. We don't even know if schools exist or not, because we're talking about 10,000. 3,000 schools. And it has turned out that some of those schools only exist on paper. There are 850,000 students in the United States right now, foreign students. They bring in about 400,000 plus per year. And there is nobody making certain that there is any integrity to this program. And we know that some of these foreign students have traditionally in the past been involved with terrorism.
Yeah, I always wondered why Hillary Clinton a couple of years ago extended the Iranian student visas from like 6 months to a two-year student visa. That was interesting that she did that a couple of years ago.
Well, it's all about the student. Look, I had a go-around with Anthony Weiner back before he lost his job when he lived up to his name. But my son worked for him as an intern, and he was allegedly my representative, but he wasn't. He was my congressman, but never my representative.
Right.
But the bottom line was that when I met him 6 months after 9/11, and ironically, right after this big argument we had, I got called by Sheila Jackson Lee's chief counsel, Leon Buck, asking me to come to Washington to testify at that hearing about ATA. But the first thing that Weiner said to me in private was, if we enforce the immigration laws, then we're going to discourage all those students. And I looked at him and I said, well, some of your students, congressmen, were responsible for reducing the World Trade Center to rubble. And the stench from the fires in that cauldron at Ground Zero still hung in the air over New York at that time. I said, take a deep breath. You're smelling the remains of New Yorkers and other people, and you're telling me about foreign students. And he ran out of the building at that point.
Well, and his wife is, you know, obviously Hillary Clinton's right-hand person, too. So, I mean, Hillary did that, and it's just, it's almost aiding and abetting at this point. I mean, those are words that I use when I look at some of the people who are in our leadership. They are aiding and abetting, you know, crimes against America.
And people don't want to get it because they're being pressured. Look, it's both sides of the aisle. John Boehner, you know, stands shoulder to shoulder with the Chamber of Commerce. All that the Chamber of Commerce wants to do is bring in as many people as possible. I'm all about profit motive, but not when you're sacrificing national security.
I agree, Lauren, with you, Mike. It's been great to talk to you tonight.
It's so wonderful to have you join me. We went long today, folks, but that's what happens when an old friend drops by to visit, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing you in just a matter of weeks now in your neck of the woods. But I hope that all of you folks out there enjoy the program because, you know, what's so important for all of us is to be able to counter the propaganda, the nonsense, whether it's being spewed by politicians or by supposed journalists. Immigration laws exist for just two purposes, to protect lives and to protect the jobs of American lawful immigrant workers, no matter what their race, religion, or ethnicity. There is nothing racist or bigoted about immigration laws. Those laws are fair. They are common sense. It is no different from a responsible homeowner looking through a peephole before admitting a stranger into his home. And that's the point to our laws. So when a politician tells you that he wants to provide benefits to an alien who's here illegally in the country en masse, I'm not talking about individual cases, and there are provisions for private bills and other ways of dealing with it. But when they talk about a massive amnesty program where there would be zero integrity, any politician who takes that position is really saying to you, I don't care about your safety, I don't care about America's survival, and I don't care if you live in poverty. Because those are the primary issues for America's immigration laws. If you go to Title 8, United States Code, section, well, you can go to, I think it's 1822, but you can go to my website. I have the actual citation with the section of law. It deals with the keeping out of aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, aliens who are criminals and human rights violators and smugglers and spies and terrorists and ultimately people who would work illegally. That's why we have the laws. Now, if you're not concerned about upholding those laws that have that goal to protect lives and American workers' jobs, then you're not representing America or Americans. You need to find a new way of supporting yourself. I mean, this is crazy stuff, folks. We the people have allowed too many politicians to get away with too much foolishness, and I presume that if you're listening to this program, you're doing so to educate yourself, and I appreciate your being here. But what I ask you to do is please make certain to reach out to your elected representatives the way you would that waiter in the restaurant and place your order. Be very clear about what you expect of your elected representative to make sure they truly represent you. Anything you want to add to that, Lauren?
No, I think you did a great job, and I just have learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to the next radio show. You do it on a weekly basis, right?
Yes, I do. Always the same time right here at between 7 and usually 8, but we can run long as we did tonight. But as
Excellent.
I say, since 9/11, I've been a man on a mission, having witnessed the death of my neighbors, having seen the people outside my house sitting on the sidewalk and crying the nights after 9/11. They didn't know where their wives or their kids or their parents were. I'll tell you, New York still suffers post-traumatic stress. We can't allow ourselves to forget.
Really,
no, that's right. We can't, and we can't forget what happened and why it happened.
Well, it's an honor and privilege to know you, and you're an inspiration. Your quote, lead, follower, get out of the way, is truly a motto to live by. And God bless you. Have a good night.
Thank you.
And I'm signing off. I'll let you finish up.
Okay,
night, Mike.
Thank you so much, Lauren. I look forward to seeing you very soon. Thank you so
All
much
right.
for joining me
Bye-bye.
Tonight. All right, bye-bye. Folks, that was Lauren Martell. She's an attorney in South Carolina. Helped make it possible for me to speak at the Tea Party Convention several months ago. I was joined by Newt Gingrich and John Santorum and some other Rick Santorum, rather, and other leaders in South Carolina. Americans need to be involved in their own government, folks. And that's what I ask you to do. And that's why I always like to end my programs by reminding everybody that democracy is not a spectator sport. Again, please go to those websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, capsweb.org. And I look forward to joining you again next week at the same time, same place, here on the Michael Cutler Hour. I thank you so much for joining me. Have a great weekend, everybody.